On BTN Live, we start focusing in on week two as we ask which game is the most intriguing. What's the latest on Nate Shielhouse and Rex Burkhead? And what impact might those injuries have heading into the weekend? Kawan Short will never be called Kawan Short again. At least not if we can help it. Purdue star defensive tackle joins us, as does Iowa coach Kirk Ferentz. All that, plus Spartan tweets and revolving Wildcat quarterbacks on BTN Live now. And with that, we welcome you into BTN Live. It is great to have you with us. Dave Revson, Howard Griffith, and welcoming Chuck Long to the Big Ten Network family. Of course, Chuck, great All-American quarterback at Iowa, Heisman runner-up to Bo Jackson in 1985. Yes. Great to have you with us.
It's good to be here. He may have won the Heisman, but I'm the much better athlete.
All around.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe not. Yeah.
Maybe.
No, just kidding.
He turned out okay. I think there's no shame.
He's pretty good. Yeah. It's good to be here, though, Dave. Thank you.
Great to have you with us, Chuck. It's going to be a lot of fun. You may have heard that this year we're on both TV and radio. So if you'd like to listen to the show on the radio and you're not right now and you're watching us on TV instead, you can see the list of affiliates. It'll be scrolling on the bottom of the screen throughout the show. Let's get into it, though. We got a really good weekend coming up, some very intriguing games. You talk about UCLA going out to Nebraska, Purdue and Notre Dame, Iowa and Iowa State, Michigan. Can they bounce back against Air Force? Which one intrigues you the most, Howard?
For me, it's Purdue. Purdue-Notre Dame. You think about Purdue going up against Notre Dame. We've talked about at length about Purdue being able to take that next step to become an upper echelon team. This is going to be a great test for them. And not having won there in 4 years is going to be another opportunity for them to step up.
It's going to be big. And now you have Turbush going in instead of Marv. And that's going to be interesting because Marv had a great day throwing the football and winning the football game. So they've inserted Turbush, and we'll see how that goes. But it's going to be an interesting matchup.
I think it's interesting, too, from Purdue's point of view. We think they can be very good. I mean, yes. You know, when Howard mm-hmm. and I and Jerry saw them at camp, I think we think they can be kind of the surprise team. And we're not alone in that. A lot of people have said that. But if you beat Notre Dame, you get people's attention. I mean, this is the kind of game where all of a sudden, not to say you've arrived, but right. It does give a sense that, well, hey, they're to be taken seriously this year, particularly with the way that Notre Dame played against Navy.
Yeah, and they're coming off a long road trip, you know, out to Dublin. They're coming back. Purdue's on the road there. They haven't won up there in a long time, mm-hmm. I think since 2004. With them coming back off that long road trip, they got a chance to win this football game, and they know it.
Not to mention, as well as they play, I'm talking about Notre Dame. They may just be looking past the Purdue team when you think about it, because yep. This is a team that they've had their way with. Now all of a sudden they've gone out, played well, and it's just Purdue. And they could be looking past them.
And three of their next four games are against ranked teams after the Purdue game. And the one that's not is Soldier Field against Miami. So you know they're going to be excited about right. That one. So I do think there's the possibility. Maybe Notre Dame does look past Purdue. So that's an intriguing game. I think we can all agree. Is there another one that's caught your eye?
I like Nebraska-UCLA. Big Ten versus Pac-12. Want to see what Taylor Martinez can do in game two. Had a great first game. But the whole thing with Taylor Martinez is consistency. You know, that's been the knock on him, and watching him last year in this film, and it was a good knock. I mean, he wasn't as consistent as Coach Pelini would like. He's off. Good start game one. Let's see if he can follow up with game two on the road on the West Coast.
You bring up a good point. You talk about consistency. Being a former quarterback and you also coach him, can you coach consistency?
You sure can. First, you do it with repetition. You know, you need a lot of repetition. But you expect your quarterback to make big jumps each and every year, especially for Taylor from last year to this year. You should see the big jump in consistency. So far, good first game. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. 10 players caught a pass for Nebraska in that first game, so he has a lot of weapons he can take advantage of. I'll tell you, UCLA had a huge game, too, against Rice, over 640 total yards. Whether or not how much of that was a function of the opponent, who knows? So we're interested to see those two games. We want to know which ones intrigue you the most. So you can vote on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/BTN. We gave you five games to choose from, the games involving Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and Purdue. So all five of those games on there. Again, go to facebook.com/BTN. Cast your vote. We'll give the results later in the show. Well, Chuck was talking about that Big Ten Pac-12 matchup. The only one, there's more than just Nebraska-UCLA. I mean, there are several of them this weekend. We're going to talk about all three of them, get some thoughts on now the informal Big Ten Pac-12 showdown. BTN Live, Dave Revs and Chuck Long, Howard Griffith. As I mentioned before the break, there are three Big Ten Pac-12 matchups this weekend. Want to consider all of them here over the next few minutes. I think Wisconsin's particularly interesting, guys, because they were somewhat underwhelming, I guess, against Northern Iowa. I mean, had to escape, had to come up with a fourth down stop in their own territory in the fourth quarter. They were not nearly as overwhelming on offense as we expect them to be. As they have been over these past couple years, where they've been one of the highest scoring teams in Big Ten history. And I guess I'm asking you, Howard, first, is it fair? I mean, are they a victim of their own success here, that people are in a tizzy about a game that for most of the game they had reasonably in hand, but just at the very end let Northern Iowa back into it?
It's expectations. It's what their fans, and when you watch Wisconsin football, that's what we expect now. You think about the numbers that they put up from an offensive standpoint with Russell Wilson and Ball last year. Huge numbers. So the expectation this year is that they should do the same. But I think it's just a natural growing pains. And I know, Chuck, you want to talk about the coaches. And I think that's an interesting facet to this when you talk about the communication side.
It is. They have six new coaches on their staff and four on offense. And there's some gelling still there. And just being on the inside in the coaching profession, it takes a little time to get to know the new staff, the player, to get that relationship built up. And then there's a trust factor there. And all those things go into play right now. I still think they're still gelling with the staff. It's going to take a couple more games to do that.
Give people a sense of what that means when you're working with people you haven't worked with before. Logistically, what are the challenges there?
Well, don't forget, you take those six new coaches, they have not recruited these players. You know, they're going to have their own flavor or their own targets when they recruit their own players and build up that 4 to 5 year relationship. So now they're going in there cold. They have to get to know them first, get to know their families and what they're all about. Then they have to teach them the game of football, how they want to, you know, it's a different room. It's a different chemistry and a different mindset coming from these coaches. So the players have to get used to these guys all over again. It still may be the same system, but it's a newness that people have to get used to.
And then how about on game day, if you're working with coaches you haven't worked with before in terms of how you communicate? I mean, is it uniform throughout staffs? I got to believe it's different no matter where you go.
It is
right?
different places. It is different. It could be very simple. Hey, my old coach used to be on the sideline. Now my new coach is up in the box, so I don't talk to him as much. It could be as simple as that. I can throw it off a little bit. And I know Coach Bielema is a terrific head coach, and him being stable there will help that situation. And they know that they're in Coach Bielema's jet stream, so to speak. The coaching staff, they're still gelling, getting used to each other.
I mean, all that being said, as we sat and watched them together, Howard, I was concerned about the run game. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Monte Ball's a guy averages over 6 yards a carry last year against some of the top competition in the country. With all due respect to Northern Iowa, we've seen them give Iowa a great game. Mm-hmm. It came down to the block field goal at the end a couple years ago, but it's still, you're talking about an FCS opponent. Right. They held Monte Ball under 4 yards a carry. We saw Wisconsin, which was the best red zone touchdown percentage team in the country last year, score only twice touchdown-wise in four trips to the red zone. How concerned would you be about those
things? Well, I don't necessarily – I wouldn't be that concerned about it, and here's why. I think when you think about it, they start to add more men to the box. Okay, who's going to beat us? It's not going to be Ball. He's not going to do it. And I think when you're a defensive coach, you're figuring out who you want to stop. And you didn't want the run game to stop, to put it in the hands. See if O'Brien can throw the football. I mean, that was what everyone wanted to know coming into this game. And he proved that he can be very efficient throwing the football.
Yeah, to his credit, he was good. And again, if those two field goals turn into touchdowns, I think we're having a very different conversation here. You were talking about Wisconsin being a staff in transition because of the six new assistant coaches. Illinois is an entirely new staff. We're talking about these Pac-12 matchups. They're going to go out to Arizona State. I was impressed. I mean, I think we were very concerned when we were there about how that would work, because these coaches are totally unfamiliar. There's no consistency with one another, but
pretty impressive, particularly on defense.
Very impressive, and they have a good defense. You know, that is, I think you have to be smart when you have an entire new staff, which is what they do. They're still getting to know their players too. But I think Coach Beckman said, hey, we've got a good defense here. You can go into a new place and keep the same playbook, so to speak. Say, let's keep the same system. We may call a little bit different from time to time, but let's give them something they know, and we'll learn off of them, is basically what I think they've done, especially on defense.
So, Howard, now they head out to Arizona State. How tough are those trips out west?
Well, it was a long time ago, Dave, when I went out that way.
You kept the diary. You checked through
it. No, but I think any time you're changing time zones, it's right. difficult. And you talk about playing a late game because of the heat that's out there. It wears on the body. You know, we're creatures of habit. Players get into a routine. Now, all of a sudden, they're going into a climate that they're not accustomed to. And yes, you may practice in it sometimes, but when you go to another time zone, it becomes difficult. And we struggle with it. But I think that's where it comes down to the head coach and also the trainer. Really getting together and finding out what's going to be the best way to have this team travel and have the best success.
And where it gets you is not necessarily game time. They'll get through the game okay. It's coming back. You know, you're coming back. You may land at 4 or 5 in the morning.
Right.
And then you got a ball game coming up again. And it takes you a couple of days to acclimate yourself again and get your body right.
So the travel is an issue. And then exacerbating that, they have some questions about their quarterback, Nate Shielhouse. Here is what Tim Beckman had to say today at his news conference.
Nathan did not get reps today, but he was out there on the field and he was working on rehab and getting the ankle prepared.
Again, Shielhouse dealing with an ankle problem, as Tim Beckman alluded to there. If he can't go, how do you feel about Riley O'Toole and Miles Osei?
Well, Riley O'Toole got an opportunity in this past weekend's game to really come up and step up and make a lot of plays. And I don't think he did as well as the coaches would have liked him to do. And Miles Osei stepped in. And when you want to run the football, he's still more than capable of being able to run the option offense that they want to run. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think they'll have packages for both if Nathan can't go, but they have to prepare for the worst.
Right. I think it's going to be interesting how that all plays out. You got to give Riley a chance to maybe begin the game and see what he can do at the start of a game, otherwise, as opposed to coming in. I think that's probably something that Coach Beckman will want to see. Again, getting back to my comment about, hey, getting to know your own players. They're still trying to get to know these guys.
And the run game's still a concern too, not just the quarterbacks.
Well, think about this now. Your tight end was your leading rusher, not only at halftime, but at the end of the game. And yes, he's talented. Don't get me wrong, but they have two running backs on his staff, and the offensive line has to get to a point where they can control the line of scrimmage. And that was one of the concerns coming into the game for me, was how was this offensive line going to gel? Because we've seen them a couple of times, and they looked a bit shaky. So it'll be interesting to see how they can continue to develop, if they can develop a run game that can really help this offense out.
It's BTN Live, Dave Revson, Howard Griffith, and Chuck Long. So we've discussed the injury issue at Illinois and how that might affect them offensively. Pretty big injury issue as well at Nebraska. Rex Burkhead went down fairly early in that game against Southern Miss with a knee injury. It is a sprained MCL. Coach Bo Pelini addressed that injury at his news conference. Here's what he had to say.
No changes there. It's had a good day today. It's questionable and day to day, we'll see how it goes.
Bo loves talking about injuries, by the way. He really enjoys it. Really brings out the best.
He wants to talk defense.
Yeah, I think, you know, that being said, again, you respect that he's trying to protect the privacy of his player, and why reveal more than you have to? What does a sprained MCL mean? I mean, tell us what that feels like and how that's going to affect a running back.
Well, first of all, they're 3 degrees. You have a first, second, and third degree MCL tears that a player can have. If it's a second or first degree
MCL. Not a tear, though, a sprain.
Right, a sprain. Right, yeah. Either one of those, though, you can put a brace on the knee to stabilize it so you don't have any injury. But the key to putting a brace on immediately is that you don't have any swelling in the knee. Because the brace is going to be key, because you don't want to further injure the knee.
Right.
So I think if you can do that, if he can get in a situation where you can get a brace on, he'd be able to go. But also consider it, what type of player he is, you want to make sure he's going to be okay for the long haul.
Right. Yeah, that's got to be a tough balancing act as a coach, right? I mean, sure, you want to go out and you want to beat UCLA, but I think you're more concerned with, hey, are we going to win the Legends Division? Are we going to represent the Big Ten in the Rose Bowl, right?
Unless you think you're a national championship-type contender, and you have to be realistic about that, you want to save for that Big Ten. In this situation, I think Coach Pelini will want to save for that Big Ten as much as he can, although he has a great competitor in Rex. And, you know, it's hard because he'll say, Coach, I want to play, I want to play. And that's where the coach has to step in and be smart about it.
How do you feel about the running back depth behind him? I mean, it was impressive against Southern Miss, huh?
There's not a problem there.
It doesn't seem like there is, no.
And there's never a problem with the I-backs when you talk about Nebraska football. Amir Abdullah will be the first guy up, and I think he's a guy, we go back to the spring, got a lot of reps, most of the reps, and I think that was a good quality time to get him out there. Now he's going to maybe relied upon to get more reps and get more playing time. But is there a drop-off? Yes. But, hey, listen, he can play. This kid can play, and he's fast.
How about Imani Cross, too? I mean, we loved him when we were there.
They just line him up.
Yeah.
Stick a guy back there, and they get it done. But that's the history and the tradition of the Nebraska I-backs.
Right. And it hasn't changed. I mean, you know Howard, and all the way back to where we played against him a long time ago. It's I-back city there.
The Mike Rozier's, the Mike Rozier's of the world.
Go on and on.
They got trophies to prove it, too.
That's right.
Had 9 different players carry the ball against Southern Miss. 632 yards in total offense. That was the most under Bo Pelini. Up next, we learn something about the star of Purdue's defense that we didn't know. You might not know it either.
Yeah.
And we will talk to him next. This is BTN Live. BTN Live, Dave Revson, Chuck Long, and Howard Griffith with you as we continue here on the show. We want to welcome in a guest now joining us from the studios in West Lafayette. He is Kawan Short, defensive tackle for Purdue. And you would think all the time I spend covering the Big Ten, you'd say, Dave, you really ought to say his name right. It's Kawan Short. But it turns out it's not Kawan Short. It is Kawan Short. If people were pronouncing my name wrong for years, Kawan, Kawan, I would say something about it. Why haven't you said anything?
Just all my life, a lot of people have been mispronouncing my name. So it just felt really pretty much grew on me. So, I mean, it's not a bad thing. The pronouncer just actually pronounced it right this Saturday. So a lot of people came up to me after that and was like, well, they were saying your name all wrong. And I was like, they really wasn't. So it was just funny just to see everybody like, oh, wow, really?
Well, I'm glad we've got it right. So it is Kawan Short. Let's get to the game this weekend. You guys haven't beaten Notre Dame in your time there. How important is this game for Purdue?
It's very important. It set the tone for the season. We know Notre Dame is a very good team, but we have a good team also this year. And we feel like we got a good chance of, you know, competing really good and coming out with the win this Saturday.
You guys had a big win last week. When you went back in and had an opportunity to watch the film, what were some of the things that as a defensive line or a defensive unit that you guys can work on that'll really give you an advantage this week?
Just being more sure and being more fast, coming off the ball a lot and staying low. Those was a couple of things that our coach was emphasizing this whole week. So right now, that's what we're going to base on our practices today, actually practice later on, just staying low, being consistent and starting fast.
Is there anything you're doing as a captain of this football team, Kawan, to get these guys ready to play, especially after a victory last week going into Notre Dame?
Well, I mean, just focus on one of the things is last week was the pass. Right now, it's a whole different ball game. You know, these guys is pretty good. Last week was pretty good, but these guys are even better. So right now, the focus had to be 100%, and everybody had to come out and be ready to play on Saturday.
You just said it, the pass is the pass. But I thought it was a very interesting story on why you decided to come back to Purdue. Could you share that with us?
Oh, yeah. Well, just a couple of problems with my mother. It was kind of hard getting into Purdue just far as, like, clearinghouse-wise and, you know, taking extra classes. So just far as, you know, me and my mother sat down before I even enrolled at Purdue and just talked about, well, how it was a struggle for us to even get here. So, and I just kept a promise that I told her I'll graduate and walk across that stage. So, you know, to make it happen, make things more easier in life. So just far as keeping that promise with my mother, it just stuck with me.
You've gotten a lot of hype. Part of the byproduct of you coming back this year, a lot of hype, a lot of attention around your return to this team. How have you handled that, kind of being in the spotlight?
To be honest, I haven't even really think about it. you know, just got a lot of friends and family who, you know, who boast and brag about it. I just sit back and, you know, hear all the things. But as far as me talking about it, I still have a dream that I'm trying to pursue, and a goal that I'm trying to accomplish, and that's just to get to the next level. So just far as me doing that, I got the other guys around me to hype me up. So just far as just staying focused and you know, having that focus on what I'm trying to do.
Purdue defensive tackle Kaywon Short, thanks for clearing some things up for us. I feel like we all learned something here today in terms of the pronunciation. And thanks a lot for joining us here on BTN Live. Good luck against Notre Dame.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So that's Kaywon Short. It is Howard, right? I'm pronouncing that right?
Most of the time, yes.
Chuck.
That's correct.
Okay, I've been called some other names.
Yeah,
we can't mention
it. Haven't we all? What about the challenge that Kaywon Short and his teammates are facing against this Notre Dame offense?
It's a big challenge. Notre Dame's offense, I saw them in the spring. I happened to make the spring tour, and they have a big offensive line with some big tight ends. And they're going to run the football. That's what they want to do. They've inserted an athletic quarterback now. So it's a big challenge for that, not only Kaywon, but the entire defense.
Yeah, you look at the challenges, and we watched them, particularly the linebackers at Purdue. You know, that's where the inexperience is there. They're going to be tested in this game. When you talk about Notre Dame's ability to get to the perimeter, we know they have the defensive tackles and the ends, but what happens when they get to the perimeter? Can the safety or the linebackers get there to make some of those plays?
This is a game where losing Dwayne Beckford has to hurt them, doesn't it?
A lot of experience you lose. Yeah, obviously, he's competed against these guys before, understands what this is all about. And when you lose a guy like that, it's going to hurt. But listen, it's the next man up. So they've got everybody else has got to play their role and understand what their assignment's going to be.
It's going to take a full team effort. Hey, they haven't won there in a long time. They got a great opportunity right now to win this road game, beat Notre Dame. And, boy, they could really take off if that happens.
And you got to think there's some pride on the line, too, for the Purdue guys. I mean, I do think we all believe, again, there's the possibility of a great season. But they thought they'd be better last year, and they were better last year. And then that Notre Dame game, if you remember, I mean, the Irish scored in the first 30 seconds of the game. It was 21-0 midway through the second quarter. It was 38-3. I mean, it was never, ever close.
Yeah, it wasn't close. So when they turn that film back on, they'll understand that. So they've got something to prove. The motivation is right there in front of them. So by the time that they get to this game, they'll understand what they need to do.
Well, plenty more to come. Kirk Ferentz will join us next. He'll talk about his thoughts coming out of that game between Iowa and Northern Illinois and the rivalry with Iowa State. That's next. Back on BTN Live, David Epson, Chuck Long, Howard Griffith with you. We are talking Iowa football now. The Hawkeyes coming off that season-opening win over Northern Illinois, and we're happy to welcome in the head coach of the Hawks, Kirk Ferentz. And Coach, what do you think? We're classing up the joint a little bit here. We got a Hawkeye in here.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. When we have officiating crews, we're not allowed to have Scott Halverson, used to be in the Big Ten, and then Robert Smith, and we're not allowed to have those guys officiate, so at least the Big Ten Network's cutting us a break here. I like that.
Absolutely. He's going to be calling the game as well on Saturday. We're working for you, Kirk. We're doing everything we can.
I appreciate that.
A lot of talk about that narrow escape against Northern Illinois and kind of what to make of that game. I'm interested from your point of view, based on what you thought about your team before the game and what you know about your team now, what's your perception after that game?
You know, the first thing is that I know our perception of Northern Illinois going in was that they're an excellent football team. They've won 22 games the last 2 years, both bowl games, and I think had one loss in the MAC. So, yeah, we knew we had our hands full. We've lost to MAC teams before. That's not a news flash, at least. So we went in with total respect for them and left with even more respect. They're very well coached. They're very talented, and, you know, they're a tough opponent. As far as our team goes, you know, just really pleased with the way our guys finished the game.
Kirk, speaking of youth, you had 13 newcomers play for the first time this year. Is that a first for you, or has it been a while for that?
Yeah, I guess I don't look things up that I don't want to know the answer to, but I've been told this is our youngest team in 14 years. And, yeah, a lot of first-time players. You think about our punter out there. And, you know, Damon Bullock played last year, but he, had 10 carries the entire season, so it wasn't like he was a seasoned running back by any stretch. But it's the one constant has been that our guys have had a good attitude. They've worked hard. And I think this is a team, I've believed this too, that it's a team that's capable of improving an awful lot.
Coach, you had an opportunity to get into the red zone four times, had to settle for field goals there. What bogged the offense down once you got into the red zone?
Yeah, and that really hard is the story of the game from my vantage point. That and giving up a big play defensively. You know, those are things you can't do and be successful. And you know, it's ironic, or maybe not so ironic, but last year that was really the story of the game when we played Iowa State. We lost in triple overtime, I believe it was. But we got down there in the red zone and couldn't punch the ball in there last year. Ended up taking field goals instead of touchdowns. And, you know, when you do that, it's tough to be successful against a good team. And that was our problem the other day. You know, we ran the ball okay, but we just weren't good enough overall.
Coach, something you haven't had to deal with in several years when you talk about having the new coordinators on the offense and defensive side of the football. How was the communications this past week?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. And, you know, we worked at it, and I think most people do. But, you know, going back to spring practice, I thought once we got everybody in their seats, you know, I think the communication, the teamwork's been great amongst our staff. They've done a great job communicating with the players and vice versa. And, you know, I think I carried right over into Saturday. So, you know, we worked at it during preseason. We haven't done that in quite some time where we had guys on the headphones and try to simulate the game day organization, if you will. But we had to do it, obviously, with the changes that we've made. And we really haven't made a big deal of it to the players or with each other, and mainly because I don't think it is a big deal as long as you take the proper steps.
Coach, this is one of your four trophy games. You currently hold none of the trophies, and we talked about this when we were there for camp. You're making no secret of this. You have the two empty trophy cases prominently displayed. How much emphasis have you put on that, on gaining the Cy Hawk trophy back this week as you've talked to your team?
You know, it's interesting, Dave. Over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of discussion about what that trophy looked like. In fact, it got voted out of office recently. And then the new one got voted out of office a year later. So unbelievable. But, you know, a lot of discussion about it. And I don't even really know what the new one looks like for sure. All I know is it's good to have it. Whatever it looks like, it's good to have it at your house instead of someone else's house. And but you have to earn that. And Iowa State earned that on the field last year. We're going to have to do the same this week if we want to get that trophy back. We're playing a very good football team, and we're going to have to play find a way to play better than they do.
I suppose one good way to find out what it looks like is to win it, right? I mean, would work.
We'll get a good first-hand look if we do that, but that's going to be easier said than done.
All right, Kirk, great luck. Best of luck this weekend. We really appreciate you joining us.
Good to be with you guys. Thank you.
But, Chuck, this is an area you know quite well. I mentioned the four trophy games. The other ones are Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin. So you add in the Iowa State game. Which one's the most important for Hawkeyes fans?
This one, just because it's in-state. Whether those trophies are there or not, it's still a big game. It goes all the way back to recruiting, too. You know, you win the state, the recruiting gets a lot better within the state, and that's where it all starts. And Kirk knows all about this rivalry. You know, he was under Hayden Fry from 1981 on. He knows. If anybody knows about it, it's Kirk Ferentz, and it's a big game.
Well, you certainly did your part. 167-34, you outscored them in your three starts.
Well,
you did all you could.
I did all.
Could you do any more?
We had a nice run. We had a nice run. Now it's gotten competitive.
They had a pretty good quarterback. Speaking of good quarterbacks, interesting quarterback story out of Northwestern, and this has kind of gotten some legs here over the last 24 hours or so. Kane Coulter, Northwestern's starting quarterback, at the end of the game against Syracuse. Now, remember, he got banged up early in this game. He was in and out of the game at various points, but he had come back in. At the end of the game, he went to the coaching staff, and he said, our best chance to win this game in a two-minute drill situation is with Trevor Siemian. You ought to put him in. And, of course, Siemian went down with 6 of 7 on the game-winning drive through an absolutely perfect touchdown pass for the game winner. So you think, hey, great call by Kane Coulter, right? Apparently, there's some people who don't think that. What's your take on this?
You know, I think it's a very difficult situation because now what happens if you're Northwestern and you're Pat Fitzgerald and you find yourself maybe down 7 points with 2 minutes or 3 minutes left in the game? I think the psyche of the team believes that Trevor Siemian now can lead them to victory. I just think it's tough for players to be in that position because now all of a sudden, if you're my starting quarterback and you're the leader, I'm looking for you. I need you to be in there regardless of your injuries. I want you in there.
I agree with Howard. I think you can get into that controversy as everybody starts to talk about later on down the road. And a lot of that's from the outside. But I did think at the time it was a great decision. I really did. You know, hey, they made a decision. It was a winning decision. At the time, they won a game. That's the bottom line. And I think Coach Fitzgerald will handle it the proper way and trying to sell that to his team and moving forward. But let's see what happens down the road with all of this.
I just think they made it perfectly clear in preseason camp when we spoke to them that they were going to use both their quarterbacks. They think very highly of Simeon, particularly as a passer. We had Coulter, who complimented him on our set, said they'd be crazy not to use him.
I'm with you, Dave. I just think it's part of the plan.
I think it's part of the plan.
It would have been great if it had been in the second quarter.
Coming up next, we're joined by former Penn State star Anthony Adams to talk about the recent developments at his school. BTN Live, Dave Revson, Chuck Long, Howard Griffith. We are joined now by former Penn State defensive tackle Anthony Adams. Anthony, kind enough to spend some time with us. You're on the Next Level as well today. We want to focus not so much on the NFL stuff, but on Penn State, on what's happened to Penn State and on Penn State going forward. You played under Joe Paterno. What's it been like for you to sit back and see everything that's happened here over the course of the last year or so?
It's been disheartening, especially, you know, with his death. He was a great man, and what I respected the most about him, he taught you how to be a man first, and then after that, he taught you football. So, you know, I respect him a lot. I respect his family, and we're just praying for the victims.
As you enter this new era now with Penn State, what has your interaction or impression been of Bill O'Brien?
Oh, he's been great. I spent some time at Penn State in March and April. With him and the team. And I like the direction that he's going. I like his offensive mind, and I think the guys are responding well. I just think it's going to take some time for him.
You mentioned you spent time there. You were working out. Tell us a little bit about the new converted weight room and their coach, Fitz.
Yeah, it's awesome. He has big screen TVs everywhere. They have all type of mats and everything there to do like power cleans and cleaning jerks and stuff like that. And nutrition everywhere. It's like apples and oranges everywhere that you can eat. And they have bi-pies there for body fats. And, you know, of course, I don't have that problem, but, you know. Yeah, my weight right now is too sexy. So, but, yeah, it was great, man. Coach Fitzgerald, he's there, you know, as soon as you walk in, like, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and get your weight and do this and do that. And his voice is just real raspy and everything like that. So, I mean, it's cool, man. It's a great experience.
What did you think about the music at practice? Are they playing some music there?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a little different wrinkle right there. They're keeping it clean, and, you know, I like it a lot. Some guys like it, some guys don't, but it's pretty cool. I like it.
Let's go on the field. Let's talk about last weekend. Obviously, a devastating loss for Penn State.
Right.
They felt that they were in a position to win the game, but what did you see that you were impressed with that they can continue to build on?
I like their offense, the way they have, the way they use their tight ends and the way they run the ball and play action and all of that. Like I said before, I like his offensive mind, and you can tell what he's trying to do. He's just going to need, you know, the guys to convert a little bit more, like on third downs, and I think they'll be okay.
What do you think in moving forward with Coach O'Brien and his staff from a recruiting standpoint? Yeah. What's going to be the biggest sell for him and his staff when they go into living rooms moving forward now?
Right. I think once he goes into someone's living room, he has to let them know that, you know, he's going to be there for the long haul. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not just going to be there for 1 or 2 years and then he's gone. He's going to be there with that person's child for 4 years or 5 years or for however long it is going to take for that person to graduate. And I think it's going to be important that he lets them know that they're going to get a great education there as well.
How about Larry Johnson, defensive line coach? You played for him. There's been a little, there's been a lot of conversation lately about him rotating too many guys in. Mm-hmm. That he's got to play with just a certain number of guys. But when you were there, he liked to rotate guys in a lot as well, right?
Yeah. I think that was just a part of the game plan. I mean, as you can see, Ohio, they were like up-tempo and it was fast-paced. And, you know, you can tell some of the guys were getting tired. There's no way that you can play, you know, 60 plays. I mean, you can, but you can't play it at a high enough level that Coach Johnson wants you to play it. So, I mean, you can go back to our film back in 2000 when we would play like Northwestern or somebody like that where it was high up tempo. I mean, you'll have guys coming in and leaving and things like that. So I think he did a great job with what he has right now. And, you know, he'll continue to do that depending on what type of team he plays.
Did you feel a different tempo in practice when you saw it, when you were watching practice? Did you feel a different tempo or that you were used to at Penn State?
Yeah. I mean, he's in your face, and he's on you if you make a mistake. Mm-hmm. You see guys taking laps, you know, for, you know, jumping off sides or just having mental lapses. So it was a different type of culture, mm-hmm. you know, stepping onto that field. And you can tell whose team it was, you know, just by watching.
Speaking of a different culture, what do you think about the names on the jerseys?
Yeah, that was a new wrinkle. But I like what he said about it. You know, he wants everybody to know that person that's out there on the field. And, you know, he said it's not going to be anything that's permanent, you know. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, you know, throughout the season and next year.
What are your next steps for you individually? I know you've had a great pro career to this point. What are you looking to do next?
Well, right now, I'm just, you know, spending a lot of time with my family and stuff like that, shooting videos, of course.
We're hearing about those videos. When's the next one coming out?
The next one I got coming out will probably be Sunday.
Okay.
I'll probably put one out Sunday. It's going to be very, very, very funny and very
interesting. What are the videos? Give us a sense of what they are. What is this?
The next video that I'm going to put out?
Yeah.
Oh, man. All I can say is that you're going to see a very agile, sexy big man.
Well, tell them a little bit about the one you've already done. What free agents say.
I've done three videos. My first video is entitled Stuff NFL Free Agents Say. And the second one is Basketball is My First Love. And the third one is Rap is My First Love.
All right.
So, you know, I did the NFL thing. No NFL teams called. So I said, okay, let me try my hand out at basketball. So, you know, it's nothing to go in there and see me gliding from the free throw line, getting close to the rim, not yet dunking it, but, you know, I'll lay it up or something like that. And then, you know, no NBA teams called. I don't know why. But so then I tried my hand out at rapping. So, and it's a rapper called 2A's. He's a house husband rapper.
That is tremendous. I'm gonna have to check this stuff out. I had no idea. We'll see. Is hockey next? I mean, if no one calls on the Rap,
I doubt it. I doubt if I can get in those skates.
Anthony Adams, thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate having you here on BTN Live. That is Anthony Adams. We've got some more stuff to talk about, including a tweeting controversy at Michigan State. We'll tell you how Mark D'Antonio reacted to it and what our coach Chuck Long thinks of players on Twitter next. Wrapping things up here on BTN Live, Dave Revson, Chuck Long, and Howard Griffith. The Michigan-Michigan State rivalry's really heated up here over the last 5 years or so. You had the Mike Hart little brother comments, and of course, subsequent to that, Michigan State has run off 4 straight wins against the Wolverines. It took a bit of a turn here on Saturday night as the Michigan State players were watching Michigan and Denard Robinson struggle against Alabama. Here's what they said. This is Danico Salen, quote, "Is this guy really a QB? I'll say my man's the walk-on Tommy Vinto is a better QB." And then he gave us the LOL, the obligatory LOL. Kyle Artinian, who is a redshirt freshman safety, said, "Denard is so bad, and it makes me feel so good." And then freshman linebacker Jamal Lyle said, "I can play quarterback for the school in blue." Le'Veon Bell for Heisman, and then the greater than sign, the other guy in the great state of Michigan. Mark D'Antonio responded to all this today.
Credit goes to the person in the arena. That's the way I look at things. You know, Michigan has a tremendous football story tradition. You know, I didn't see much different when we played them. When we played the University of Alabama a couple years ago, and it's tough. And so our guys need to keep their mouths shut. Is that blunt enough? Okay, so that's where we'll go with that. I'm sure that'll make headline news, especially those that aren't even playing.
Ouch.
Yeah. Look, I think it's clear the tweet showed really bad judgment, but I think it brings up a much broader question. I mean, all of these kids want to be on Twitter. Just about everyone, it seems, who's in the public eye at all is on Twitter. And so now as a coach, how do you handle this? So you've been a head coach. What do you do with Twitter? This is a new animal. This is kind of uncharted territory. What do you think?
Twitter's here to stay, Dave, and head coaches have to find a way, like everything else in their program, to educate them on Twitter. I believe in the one, it's got to come from one voice, the head coach. He's got to get him in there in training camp and teach him how to Twitter, what to say, what not to say. And I do believe they should ban kids from doing it right after a ball game. And I think that's when emotions really are flying high. Give it to the next morning. And again, getting back to a daily education on what to say. And each week's a little bit different for Twitter. Each opponent's a little bit different. And I got news for you. Denard Robinson's a pretty good ball player. He's pretty good.
That education that you're talking about, they got that one today. So imagine what Coach D'Antonio just said in front of the microphone. Now amplify that. So right. I don't think you have to worry about these Michigan State players doing that again, because I think it's about respect. It's having a respect for the game, a respect for your opponent. But I think it's another teachable moment where not only Michigan State, but all over the country, you can say, hey, guys, these are not acceptable comments. We cannot be giving our opponents bulletin board material.
The problem is it's already out there. And yeah. I think there's just this obliviousness to the permanence of Twitter. That it's there. When you say it, it's there. And now Denard Robinson knows about it. He was quoted today as saying, I heard about it. I'm not going to worry about it right now. But he knows about it. And
sure.
As if he needs more incentive than the fact that they've lost them 4 years in a row.
He's pretty good. Yeah. And I think Twitter is the number one coach's challenge for the media today. I really do.
Fascinating.
How to handle that.
Something that didn't exist a handful of years ago. It's crazy. All right, I have a few tweets for you guys. It is our Ask the Analysts segment. This one comes from John. Howard, I'll let you handle this one. Who will emerge as the Spartans' go-to wide receivers?
Ooh, I'd say Tony Lippett is going to be one of those guys, but I'd also throw a name in like Deion Sims, the tight end. It's going to be another guy that's going to step up, particularly when you think about the youth and inexperience at the quarterback position. We saw in the play calling that they're going to try to go to Sims quite a bit.
I thought Benny Fowler was fantastic when we were there. Now, he didn't play a huge role in the game against Boise State. But
the biggest thing about Benny is he's healthy. So he's going to make some plays for this team.
This one comes from David. Chuck, I'll let you handle this one. Would love to hear your take on Wisconsin's, and then this is in quotes, soft non-league schedule, and if you think it hurts them in big games.
I don't. It's been their mantra for years, going back to Barry Alvarez when he was a head coach. We used to say that about Wisconsin, but they've proven time and time again that they get in that Big Ten and win some of those big games. They've been Big Ten champs the last 2 years. So, you know, I think they've proven that it doesn't matter.
It's going to change, though. I mean, it has to change. Barry Alvarez was quoted the other day as saying there's really been an impetus to change it. I mean, if you're going to compete for a national championship now, you're going to have to change it.
I think so. You have to win that big game. If that's their goal, and everybody says that goal, but if it's a realistic goal for Wisconsin, yes, they're going to have to play a big game early.
If you're at the bottom of the league, maybe that's not your goal. Maybe you don't change your philosophy. But if you're a team that's been to two straight Rose Bowls, I would have to think you would. This one comes from Pat Brown. He wants to know a dark horse to win the Big Ten. Start with you.
Purdue. Purdue's my dark horse. I just looking at them over the summer, coming off an impressive bowl victory last year, and they have a lot of guys coming back. Purdue is my dark horse to in this Big Ten race.
Chuck, you fit right in. I mean, that's what we've been talking about a lot about this Purdue team, and really we've talked about how this roster's changed since he's taken over. Danny Hope's done a tremendous job of that, and as we've also said, this is the year that they have an opportunity to make that jump, and it starts this weekend.
And it starts with a very intriguing game this weekend, although, according to our viewers on Facebook, not the most intriguing game. Only 25% picked that game. Iowa State against Iowa, the game you will be calling here on BTN, one as the most intriguing game. Chuck, Nebraska, UCLA second, followed by Purdue, Notre Dame, and then Illinois, Arizona State, Michigan, and Air Force, both with 6%. All right, this was fun. Guys, we'll do it again next week. We will look forward to hearing you on the game Saturday. Don't forget, BTN Live, radio only tomorrow. Plus, we have the first Big Ten and Beyond of the year, 6:30 Eastern time here on BTN. We'll see you then.